Jesus died.
Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari. Jasodha Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanashari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivraja Gacharya Shatara Shata Shri Shimhai. His Divine Grace, Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jaya. Raja Granta Shrima Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Samveda Bhakti Brindi Ki Jai. Gaura Pramandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Agyant Mirandashya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantigam Vancha Kalputarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Revacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 12, Text 10. Evam Krisham Stulam Anur Brihat Yad Asach Chasaj Jivam Ajivam Anyat Dravya Swabhava Shayakala Karma Namna jaya vehi kritam dvitiyam. Evam krisham stulam anurbrihad yad. Asach chasaj jivam ajivam anyat. Dravya swabhava shayakala karma. Namna jaya vehi kritam dvitiyam. Mothers, anyone wants to chant? Evam, thus, krisham, skinny or short, stulam, fat, anu, tiny, brihat, big, yat, which, asat, impermanent, cha, and, sat, existing, jivam, the living entities, ajivam, inanimate, lifeless matter, anyat, other causes, dravya, phenomena, swabhava, nature, ashaya, disposition, kala, time, karma, activities, namna, only by such names, ajaya, by material nature, evehi, you should understand, Kritam done. Dvitiyam duality. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: since this universe has no real ultimate existence, the things within it, shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness, smallness, bigness, result, cause, living symptoms, and materials are all imagined. They are all pots made of the same substance, earth, but they are named differently. The differences are characterized by the substance, nature, predisposition, time, and activity. You should know that all these are simply mechanical manifestations created by material nature. Purport: the temporary manifestations and varieties within this material world are simply creations of material nature under the various circumstances. Prakritihi kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. The actions and reactions carried out by the material nature are sometimes accepted as our scientific inventions. Therefore, we want to take credit for them and defy the existence of God. This is described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 27. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Due to being covered by the illusory external energy, the living entity tries to take credit for the differentiated creations within the material world. Actually, all these are being created automatically by the material force set in motion by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the ultimate cause is the Supreme Person, as stated in Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Paramakrishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, Anandir Adigovinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes, the ultimate cause. In this regard, Srila Madhavacharya says, Evam Sarvam Tata Pakritvayi Kalpitam Vishnur Anyat. Evam prakrityadhara swayam ananyadharo vishnur eva ata sarva shabdash chatasmin eva. Actually, the original cause is Lord Vishnu. But out of ignorance, people think that matter is the cause of everything. Raja goptasrayo bhumi sharanam cheti lokikaha Vyavahara natat satyam toyo brahmashrayo vibhu. Things are contemplated on the ephemeral or external platform, but actually this is not the truth. The actual protector and shelter of everyone is Brahman, the Supreme, not the King. Goptri chatasya pakritis tasya vishnu swayam prabhud tava goptri tu prithivi Natvam gopta kshite smita, ata sarvashrayashchaiva gopta cha hari ishvara, sarvashabdha bidheyashcha shabdvritir hikaranam, sarvantara sarvabhaihir eka eva janardhanaha. The actual protectress is the material nature, but Vishnu is her Lord. He is the Lord of everything. Lord Janardhana is the director, both externally and internally. He is the cause of the function of words and what is expressed in all sound. Shiraso dharata yadvat grivayas tadvat evatu asrayatvam chagoptrituam anyesham upacharataha. Lord Vishnu is the resting place of the entire creation, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Bhagavad Gita chapter 14, verse 27. On Brahman, everything is resting. All the universes are resting on the Brahmajyoti, and all the planets are resting on the universal atmosphere. In each and every planet, there are oceans, hills, states, and kingdoms, and each planet is giving shelter to so many living entities. They are all standing on the earth of feet and legs, torso and shoulders, but actually everything is resting ultimately on the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is known ultimately as Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So I think this is a section where Jatabharata is now responding to the king's aggressive statements to him about sarcastic statements to him in the previous chapter, right? Criticizing him for being dull-headed and so on. So here, Jatabharata, it seems that he wants to point out that the Supreme Lord is actually the cause of everything, including the way that we're giving meaning to this world. Actually, the living entities, we are in the material world because we want to exist separate from Krishna. That's why the living entity comes into the material world. And then in order for the material world to be meaningful, we need a false ego. Otherwise, the material world would be meaningless. That's the first thing that's required to give meaning to this place. It's like dreams. When we dream of many things, sometimes pious, sometimes impious, and Kali Yuga perhaps more impious than pious. We dream of many things, and a dream is ultimately insubstantial, or mental concoction. It's ultimately insubstantial. There's no meaning to it whatsoever. It doesn't actually exist in truth. The things that we're concocting daily, the things that we're imagining about others, what they're thinking about me. Generally, we think everyone is thinking about us. As you make a little bit of advancement, you realize no one is thinking about us. Anyway, we concoct many things. And these concoctions seem very real, but they're ultimately insubstantial. The only thing is that just as when you identify a rope as a snake in darkness, then that creates an experience. When you see a rope as a snake in darkness, then you start freaking out, right? Although that is ultimately, it's an illusion, it's insubstantial. That rope, which you're imagining to be a snake, can ultimately not harm you. It ultimately has no meaning. But because of thinking it so, then you get a certain experience. You become fearful in that example. In the same way, we have dreams, or we have our existence in our waking life. And ultimately, all these existences are insubstantial. In terms of the way we think of them, they're insubstantial. The reason they appear meaningful is because we have a false ego. Or let's say how they appear meaningful to us is due to ahankara. First of all, we're in ignorance. That's the foundational platform. We don't know who we are. That is actually required to exist in the material world of substanceless, shadowy afflictions. Right? You need to be in ignorance to go after something that's insubstantial, isn't it? If you were in full knowledge, then the material world wouldn't be appealing whatsoever. So the first thing is ignorance is required. So we take it for granted that everyone in the material world is ignorant. And then once you don't know who you are, that becomes the foundation for false ego. You need to be ignorant to then identify something that you're not. First there needs to be ignorance of the self. Then you can identify with something that you're not, right? If you know who you are, then there will be no question of identifying with something that you're not. So ignorance becomes the foundation for ahankara. And based on that ahankara, then we become attracted or averse to things in this world. And we become completely absorbed in it. In this way, we're completely illusioned. If there wasn't any ahankara, then nothing would be meaningful. Just like, I often give this example. When a young girl is next to a young boy, then the young boy becomes very bewildered. But why doesn't a young pig become very bewildered? A hog. A hog does not become bewildered. If Miss America sits next to a hog, Miss America, or whoever, Miss India, whoever, sits next to a hog, the hog is very peaceful. Is it because he is a great yogi? He is very peaceful. Why is he very peaceful? His false ego doesn't identify with Miss America. So then he can peacefully sit next to her. Whereas when we sit next to Miss America, you know, we have to start chanting the Nisshinga mantras and get out of that situation as soon as possible. Because we have a false ego that identifies with that situation and makes it meaningful for us. Although ultimately it's insubstantial. Or conversely, to say it the other way around, when a she pig sits next to a young man, he doesn't feel bewildered whatsoever. He feels disgusted more than bewildered. And why does he feel disgusted? Because his false ego doesn't identify with that as an attractive thing. So it is a false ego that makes us attracted or averse to anything in this substanceless world. Ultimately, it really has no meaning in terms of the way we're thinking of it. It is meaningful because it is Krishna's energy. And Krishna's energy can ultimately be used for Krishna's service. It can be used to augment the pleasure of the Lord. And when we think of it in that way, then it becomes very meaningful. Everything becomes meaningful in the world. So we're not Mayavadis, where we say, well, the world is ultimately meaningless, and therefore we become completely averse to it. When you're a Gani, Ganis are averse to the material existence. They see that it is substanceless, and so they're averse to it. But a devotee sees it as actually Krishna's energy. So he interacts with that energy in terms of augmenting the pleasure of the Lord. So therefore, everything in this world becomes meaningful, but due to the freedom from false ego, or the identification of being a servant of Krishna, and then seeing how this energy is connected to Krishna, then everything becomes meaningful. The entities in this world become meaningful, the various forms become meaningful, and so on. But when you don't have Krishna consciousness, when you don't see the connection with Krishna, then ultimately, whatever we're doing is simply imagination. And we're being misled by an imagination. Just like a mental concoction. How many of you ever had a speculation about a devotee? You know, some doubt, some heavy doubt, or some speculation about what they're thinking and so on. That ever happens? And how many of us have taken that speculation far, very far, and then once it gets a certain distance, you're absolutely sure that this is true. And then everything that the devotee is doing is confirming it. You're like, check, check. Everything you see him doing is a confirmation of that mental speculation. And then later on, you may find out that you were simply just imagining that none of it was actually true. But unfortunately, this is what's happening to the souls in the mature world. On account of ignorance and then ahankar, we're imagining a world full of enjoyment. Everything that we're seeing is just our imagination. Just like when you're dreaming, you may dream of good things or bad things, but it's all imagination. In the same way, in ignorance, we're dreaming of good or bad, but it's all just an illusion. It's just duality to keep us distracted from the actual truth. The actual truth is Krishna, which is free from material designation, sarvabhupati vinir muktam, tvaparatena nirmalam. It is free from material designation. That is the actual truth. Krishna is everything. Sarvakaranakarna, he's not only the cause of everything, but he is everything by dint of his energy and himself being non-different. So that is the actual truth. And anything that we're seeing outside of that is just our imagination. Something is enjoyable, something is not enjoyable. Something is pleasurable, something is not pleasurable. We're getting totally caught up in duality and we forget the goal of life. This is the trick of the material energy. It's called the Prakshapatmika Shakti. There's two types of Shakti of Maya. I often joke there's three. Two technically speaking. Avaranatmika Shakti means the covering potency. This is the energy of Maya that says that everything we're doing in this material world is normal. This is perfectly normal. We were on Belmont and Clark, this is a year ago or so, but it always stands in my mind. And we saw an old couple making out on the corner. Now, for us, due to our ahankara, we're like, that's gross. Of course, that is also gross just by dint of the truth. but they were thinking that was something very wonderful. It was, though, imagine. This is called the Avaranatmika Shakti. The Avaranatmika Shakti makes you normalize the situation. Makes you say, this is perfectly normal. Someone is 75 years old, 80 years old, kissing on the corner in the public. You would think, okay, if you're going to do that business, especially as old as you are, it's not even attractive to anyone. You can at least do that business inside so you don't gross everyone out. But no, they're doing it out in the public, and this is perfectly normal. This is called the Avaranatmika Shakti. Or a worm is eating stool, and he thinks this is perfectly normal. This is where it's at. He's thinking like this. You know, if you invite him or her to come take nice prasadam, hey, what is this prasadam? Oh, so much wonderful stew stuff is available, and you're offering this other nasty thing you're offering. He's thinking, and he thinks that is totally normal. And then we'd say, what a fool that he is. We think like that. Or we see how the he-hog is getting attracted to the she-hog, and we say, what a foolish person. You know, how covered over he is. And then after we criticize him, we go and do the same business. Because we're thinking that this is normal. And then when you come to get an idea that this is not normal, that the material energy, there's something wrong with this whole setup. When that starts to come to the mind, the Maya has another Shakti that's called the Prakshapatmika Shakti, which means this Prabhupada's language, the spell of diversion. The spell of diversion means now you see that there's something wrong with this whole setup. You've examined it, you've come to ascertain to some degree that this is illusory. And therefore you think, let me get out of this material nature. And at that time, Maya starts to send distractions that keep your consciousness absorbed in her. So this one is not so easy to overcome. This category, many devotees, we will fall into that category being perhaps neophyte as we are, that we know that there's something wrong with the whole setup because we've heard from devotees. Although we're not fully convinced on account of ahankar, but we've heard that this is illusory, it can't give us satisfaction. So we're trying to get out of the material nature by chanting Hare Krishna and reading the scriptures, associating with devotees, taking prasadam and so on. We've accepted some sadhana for liberation. Presumably everyone here is doing some type of sadhana, right? For elevating themselves. But how many times do we allow ourselves to get caught up in the world of duality? You know, this is good, this is bad. She likes me, she doesn't like me. That Vaishnava is my enemy, that Vaishnava is my friend. How many times we're getting absorbed in this type of consciousness? And in that way, Maya is keeping us distracted from the real purpose of our existence. So the Prashopadmika Shakti is tricky to deal with. It comes in the form of, she, using the mind as a main agent, it comes in many ways. Absorption and duality is one way, doubts is another way, and so on. And this way she keeps us distracted by all petty things. If you were to examine a lot of the things that we take very seriously from a distance, it may not be as serious if we were to just look at it from a, let's say, third person's perspective or from a distance. But on account of the influence of the Maya Shakti, we take it very seriously. And this way we're imagining skinniness, shortness, as mentioned in here, fat and strong, not seeing that everything's ultimately coming from Krishna, meant for Krishna's service. And this way we remain illusion and we remain in the material world. As long as our consciousness is absorbed in Maya, then we have to take birth in the world of Maya. So our business is how to, dissolve the false ego. That is absolutely necessary for spiritual advancement. Even we're chanting Hare Krishna, but if we're chanting with false ego, then the chanting can't be pure. Because the reason it can't be pure is because the false ego will force the mind to contemplate things which are not congenial for chanting, while chanting. And therefore, it would be very hard to make spiritual progress. When you have a ahankar, what are you thinking about? What do we think about when we chant japa? We're totally fixed on the holy name, right? We totally realize that nam and nami are non-different. And therefore, we can sleep while we chant due to that profound realization that the holy name is Krishna. Therefore, we're finding so much attraction that we're sleeping, right? Or if we're not sleeping, what is the mind absorbed in? Oftentimes, we wonder why we're not making much advancement even though we've accepted the process. This doubt comes up quite a bit. That, okay, I'm initiated, I'm second initiated even, I'm chanting, I'm worshiping the deities, I'm taking prasadam, but advancement isn't coming. That happens quite a bit. But the reason advancement, in the beginning we were like flying, at least I have that experience, I don't know about you. But in the beginning I was like flying like Superman. I was like, definitely I'm coming out of this material world this life. There is no doubt about it. Of course it's called Usahamayi, little false ego is there. But I was feeling pretty confident that I'm coming out of the material world this life. And then after a few more years of practice, I said, I'm pretty sure I'm coming out this life. Then a couple more years of practice, maybe I'm coming out this life. And then after 10 years of practice, I'm like, definitely I'm taking birth again. There is no doubt about it. Because I'm chanting, but the mind is absorbed in so many nonsense things. When you're not chanting, the mind doesn't seem to be so much absorbed in those things. As soon as you put the hand in the bead bag, I think I remember Rupa Maharaj saying that some devotees, if you want to know how advanced you are, he said, just stick your hand in the bead bag. You want to know how advanced you are, and see, as soon as you say, Hare Krishna, the mind goes running to nonsense things. And on account of not being absorbed in Krishna, then we don't go to Krishna. It's kind of simple as that. Tasmat, Arjuna asked a question in Bhagavad Gita, how can I remember you at the time of death? Because it's not easy to remember Krishna ever. And if we're not practicing to remember Krishna while we're existing, then we can hardly expect to remember Krishna at the time of death. So Arjuna asks this question to Krishna, how can I remember you at the time of death? It's a very good question. In other words, people translate it in this way. Can I do what I want? And then at the end, I can just think of you and go back home, back to Godhead. But Krishna says, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, why only at the time of death? Sarveshu Kaleshu, at all times you should think of me. Mamanusmana, Sarveshu Kaleshu Mamanusmana, at all times you should think of me. And Arjuna likes that program. Okay, I'll just go to the forest then and think of you. And then Krishna says, Yudhicha, and you also engage in your duty. So that was a little bit, you know, disappointing. And then Krishna says, my asakta manobhudir, with your mind and intelligence attached to me, with your mind and intelligence attached to me, then certainly you will come to me. There is no doubt about this. So we're practicing the process, but our minds are not absorbed in Krishna, but rather absorbed in duality due to the influence of the material energy. Then it would be very hard to make spiritual progress. And therefore, 20 years is passing by, and still some of the same petty topics that were interesting for us when we first started out are still interesting for us 20 years later. And then we're wondering why we're not improving. So it's absolutely essential that we increase our absorption in Krishna. It is not that that principle is not practical. Mamana bhava ma bhakto. When we hear that, Krishna says, think only of me. When I heard that, I was like, what type of instruction is this? Think, you know, in the false ego, first, what type of person is it? Think only of him. And then, of course, he's God, so we don't have any problem with that as devotees, in theory. But in practice, think only of Krishna. Can you do that even for 5 seconds? Think only of Krishna for 5 seconds. Let's try it out. Not even for 2 seconds you can do. Mind is jumping, isn't it? At least you're thinking about what I'm saying. Anyway, that's also, in a sense, not indifferent. So it's very difficult to think only of Krishna throughout one's entire existence, even for a short period of time, to speak of one's entire existence. But it's not that that instruction is impractical. The process of spiritual life is about step by step increasing our absorption in Krishna. Services, the various services that we're doing are meant to increase our absorption in Krishna. It's very important that we don't run into the trap of feeling satisfied by just being engaged, but not being attentive to how our consciousness is actually being absorbed. Sometimes we feel, because I'm engaged in devotional service, then certainly I'm protected. And to some degree that is true. But if your mind is not engaged, then you're in danger, actually. There's great dangers there. And we see that all the time. So Krishna's advice to Uddhava that one has to make step-by-step increments in his absorption and hearing and chanting about Krishna. In the beginning, we have a lot of youthful energy, so we use that youthful energy for engaging in various types of services. But as we're moving forward in our spiritual life, we have to make a test of how much taste are we having for hearing and chanting. What is that verse? Dharma sunusita pumsa vikshak senakatasu yahat na upadayat yadi ratim shama evahi kevalam. This first instruction comes up that whatever dharma you're doing, whatever duties you may be performing, you have to see how that is helping to increase your taste, or rati means attachment, to hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna. If we're having a hard time chanting the holy name of Krishna, if we're having a hard time hearing about Krishna, then there can be no question of absorption in Krishna, without which there's certainly every chance that we're going to take birth again in the material world, on account of our absorption in various petty things. So human form of life is a durlabha manava janma. It's a very rarely attained opportunity for absorbing ourselves in Krishna. And it's not that we are to wait until the fag end of our life, where our body is overwhelmed by mental and physical decrepitude, before we can take that seriously. Sometimes we meet many like that, Indian boys especially, who said, when I am 50, I will read Bhagavad Gita. When I am 70, I will start reading Bhagavad Gita. What do you do at 70? Simply sleep. You know, body is breaking down. Body is overwhelmed by mental and physical decrepitude. How you will focus that time? So now is the time for starting the increase of absorption in Krishna. Ideally, 24 hours a day is the standard. That means 6 hours you sleep, and the rest of the time we're supposed to be absorbed in Krishna. Now, that's obviously very challenging for us at our stage. But we should try to make increase the time spent with Krishna in order to guarantee our chances of being absorbed in Krishna at the time of death. Of course, I'm thinking of the Ishopanishad verse where the devotee prays that I may not be able to think of you, my dear Krishna. So you please remember all that I've done for you, so that at least you will think of me at the time of death. We like that. That one feels nice, right? I don't have to do any hard work. Krishna, you remember me, whatever I've done, you're very grateful, and take me home back home to Godhead. But we should know that's a very genuine prayer, is coming from a place of deep surrender to the Lord. Whereas we may have to actually increase our surrender in order to improve our chances for Krishna absorption and freedom from the influence of our false egos. So anyway, I didn't get time to prepare myself properly, but I spoke what I can understand from a perusal. Does anyone want to add anything to the discussion here, or any comments or concerns? Yeah.
Thank you for your class. I was just thinking, when you're practicing devotional service with the false ego, you take support from various quote-unquote illusions that are helpful. Like, for example, even the idea that I'm a brahmachari, that's an illusion, right? Because in the real sense, you know, I'm not a man, things like that. So to what extent are those things helpful, and to what extent do those things actually become like diversion from the goal of life?
Well, the principle is we have to see what is favorable for the cultivation of prema, or cultivation of our absorption in the holy name of Krishna. So if the identification as a brahmachari is assisting my increased absorption in the name and my increased enthusiasm for the pursuit of prema, then that designation is to be accepted as a very good thing, as favorable. And to the degree some identification is tending to detract me from that absorption, then to that degree it should be considered unfavorable. The principle guiding a devotee who is a sharanagata, that means surrendered, is this principle. There are 6 principles, but these are the first 2 that are mentioned. What is that? Anu Kulyena Sankalpa, Pratikulyena Varjana. These are the first 2 principles. So I'm identifying myself as a brahmachari. Is that helping me in my increased absorption in Krishna? Or is my designation as a brahmachari making me think, ew, women, cooties? You know, when we were kids, we used to have this thing that all girls had the cooties. I don't know what the cooties meant. We may not need to discuss that here. But there was like disease, and we used to do this thing. The girls would do it to the guys also, you know? And then around 10, 11, 12, things changed. Unfortunately for us, downhill from there. So if our absorption as a brahmachari is making our minds get absorbed in these types of things, then to that degree it's unfavorable and should be rejected. So we have to see how a designation that we're accepting for ourselves, for existing in the conventional sense, we have to exist in this world. So we exist in a conventional way, you know, within society, societal terms. But we have to see to what degree it is helping us to absorb ourselves in Krishna, or to what degree it's detracting from that absorption. And to that degree, it should be rejected or accepted. Now, this can get complicated when you get into the realm of doing devotional service, you know, where like a service has been designated to you, and it seems to be actually detracting you away from absorption in Krishna. You're getting absorbed in other affairs. I'm particularly thinking of management, because that's the first thought that comes to mind when you have to manage people in general. It's like less time thinking about Krishna, so much time thinking about people and what they're doing, what they're not doing, and so on. It makes it hard to focus. And then you may say, well, this is unfavorable, and then reject it, but that may not always be the best. For those types of sticky situations, one may need extra discussion with other sadhus and spiritual master for clarification. But we have to know that death is very near to us. Oftentimes I ask this question to newcomers. I asked it in India. We were doing some program for some young boys. So I asked them this question also. I said, if you were to die tomorrow, how would you live your life today? It's a very exposing type of question. And you can also have that exercise. If we knew we were going to die tomorrow, how will we live our life today? You know, the types of things that we take serious, the types of things that we get absorbed in, which have nothing to do with the goal of life and so on. If we knew we were going to die tomorrow, would we take those things in the same light? That's how we're supposed to actually be existing. And in that way, we can understand what is favorable, what is unfavorable for progress, when we know that death is near to us. Whenever I'm on the plane, I'm always in anxiety because the plane is a death trap. They try to create a situation where it's very wonderful. You know, they bombard you with sense gratification. The whole plane ride is amazing. The stewards and stewardess, they're walking up and down throughout the whole plane, 9-hour plane ride, up and down walking. Here's a popsicle. Here's your meal. Here's a cookie. You want some tea? Here's some milk. Like, constantly bombard the senses, and then the movies are there. And they have so many movies now. Before, it used to just be one movie that everyone had to force to watch, you know, and it was usually horrible. So everyone did their own thing. But now they have a large selection is there, from drama to comedy to action. And each category would have so many movies you can watch. And then they have a section for games. One young man was sitting in front of me on the plane ride home, and he would watch a movie, then he would play a video game. Then he would watch another movie, then he would play another game. For the whole plane ride, this is a perfect way to spoil your consciousness. The plane ride, you know, just 9 hours, you just really destroy the consciousness very easily. But I'm always in anxiety on the plane because I always feel death is very near. You know, it's a very precarious situation. You're thousands of miles up in the air. Anything can go wrong at any moment. A bird flies to the thing, finished, you know? Finished. Something like as small as that can finish you off, you know? And many times when they're going through the clouds, I noticed this on the plane ride. When you're going through the clouds, the plane experiences a lot of turbulence at time, especially if the clouds are very thick and the plane has to fly through them. That time the plane experiences a lot of turbulence. So when you look out the window, you can't see anything but cloud, and the plane is like shaking like anything. I'm like, this is it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. At that time, you can focus a little bit on Krishna, because it's very evident that I'm in a precarious situation. But once we get on ground level and we start to associate with others and everyone's loves and kisses and illusion, then we forget that we're very close to death. So therefore we become bewildered what is needed and what is not needed. When you're in a situation where you're about to die, it's very clear what should be accepted, what should be rejected. But when we're not aware of that, then it becomes very bewildering. So that has to be the guiding principle for a surrendered devotee. Is this favorable for my attaining the goal of life, prema, or is it not? That becomes challenging sometimes, yeah.
You're talking about chanting with false ego? When we're chanting and that the false ego is active, then even chanting doesn't help, or it actually makes things worse. So how does one go beyond that?
My understanding is Shravanam will save us. Shravanam, of course, and save us, but Shravanam particularly is very important for everyone, but especially so for neophyte devotees. Because every Shravanam program, if done attentively, creates a samskara, a bhakti samskara. This is mentioned. Now the conditioned souls, we're suffering from so many other samskaras from our existence in this life and previous life. So that means when we chant, those samskaras, samskara means impressions. Those impressions rise to the surface, particularly when we're chanting. And so if we can fill our life with more devotional samskaras, then those samskaras can arise in the mind and thus keep the mind at least within a boundary of Krishna conscious level absorption. And that can help to generate enthusiasm for getting more fixed on hearing the name. Prabhupada says that actually one should just hear the name of Krishna. But hearing is very difficult for one who has an uncontrolled mind. And then, how does that sequence go in the Bhagavatam? Prabhupada gives in the end of chapter 3. For one, if you want to control your mind, you have to be pure. Yeah, one who is not pure in mind cannot just hear. We have experience, isn't it? But to be pure in mind, you have to be pure in action. And to be pure in action, you should be pure in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Prabhupada said that. So the standard is to just hear the name of Krishna, actually. But we can't do that because we're not pure in mind. So by the process of shravanam, that creates devotional samskara. So that helps us to keep our mind within a devotional arena. In my experiences like this, which can generate enthusiasm for just getting fixed in chanting Hare Krishna. When the mind is filled with a lot of devotional thoughts, that generates utsaha. When it's filled with anarthas, we become melancholy. We feel like just dropping the whole program. It's not working. But when you have it filled with devotional thoughts, it can create enthusiasm. And then that enthusiasm, we can take it to our chanting to fix our consciousness in the name of Krishna. So every shravanam program that we do with attention is important. Of course, I should mention that one can chant purely even when the influence of ahankara is there. I want this point should be mentioned because actually ignorance is prevailing all the way up until the stage of bhava. Only at the stage of bhava is ignorance considered to be completely eradicated. So even though the stages of nishtha, ruchi, and asakti are very elevated, the influence of ignorance is still prevailing at that time. Only at the stage of bhava, where there is swarup siddhi, is there actually complete realization of one's identity in relationship to Krishna, and ignorance is totally destroyed. So at the stage of ruchi, which is full surrender to Krishna, one can chant the pure holy name of Krishna. Ruchi means nandanam nanjanam nasundarim kavitam bhajagadisha kamaye. This is the stage that is described as the stage of taste for Krishna. No need for dana, no need for jana, no need for sundarim. Very difficult one. No need for sundarim. No need for kavitam, liberation and so on. That is the stage of... So the influence of ahankara is still prevailing there. This is you can read in Madhurya Kandambini. It's still prevailing, but your chanting is pure at that time because you're fully surrendered to Krishna. So our business as sadhakas is to become fully surrendered. That's when everything becomes auspicious. But that's not so easy either. But even when you're fully surrendered, although the influence of ahankara is still there, the chanting is pure, and that pure chanting will deliver you. So how to get there? We have the process of hearing and so on, carrying on like that. I don't know if that's what I can say. Okay, Ashari Bhuvan.
You brought up that sequence from the Srimad Bhagavatam of purity in mind, action, and the senses. And he asked the question about how much our identity helps us to actually make advancement as opposed to just being an illusion. And then his question, it's all on the same line. So it lined up for me very simply that like we need a culture. It's not that we necessarily identify with our varna or something like that, but we have to accept that culture knowing that we are conditioned. That's with guidance and everything as you explained, knowing what is suitable for us. And then within that culture, as you were also pointing out, the mind has to be engaged. It's not just that you do the activities, but the purity of mind actually comes when you absorb the mind in the substance of those activities, which is the devotional content or the... Like, we have a temple culture where at Mangalarti, okay, I'm there, but are you actually tuned in and, like, absorbing your mind in the sound vibration of the song, or are you just there for the... So there's, like, different levels of absorption, and when all of those line up, it makes it much easier to actually... just be focused on chanting when you get to the chanting part because your whole, being is engaging properly like that. And then the natural thing is to be able to absorb in the chanting. So as far as pure chanting or whatever, I don't know how that exactly connects, but just as like a practical thing, that alignment, as you were pointing out, I'm just saying it, with other components to it, allows us to focus more naturally, I guess. And that also includes, of course, what we're hearing and everything, but just that, it just sort of flowed like that for me, so I don't know if that makes sense for anybody else.
Some Hare Krishna. Something I remember several years ago, Krishna Smarnam Prabhu was giving a Sunday feast lecture, and he was speaking about when unwanted thoughts arise in the mind. And he, to the best of my recollection, mentioned something like extricating those thoughts and, you know, tossing them aside. I have also heard...
That sounds easier said than done.
Of course, it was Prabhu who was saying it. So I have also heard...
That doesn't change the reality of the it's sorry. A little challenging to do that. Have you ever tried doing that?
No, I'm just mentioning what I heard in the Sunday Feast lecture. No, I have also heard that, like, thoughts rise, anarthas rise. Yeah. So let them rise and let them go. There's two schools of thought, and there could be more discussion, or if someone knows more about that, I'm just stating up to the point that I know.
We should state the point. We should also comprehend it. There is a challenge in just extricating thoughts from the mind. Krishna speaks about this in Bhagavad Gita, Vishaya Vinivartante, Nirahara. He speaks about a person restricting himself from attractive material things, but his mind is dwelling on them. And he can't get his mind to stop dwelling on them. It's very challenging. Krishna speaks this thing. But Rasa Raja and Rasa Priya, by getting attracted to a higher taste, he's able to draw his mind away from those lower things and get absorbed in something better. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentions this, that the real secret to controlling the mind, it has to be controlled by a higher taste, by a higher attraction. That's how the mind actually can get controlled. If we're just doing the, how you say, grit the teeth program of resisting our material attractions, then there's every chance at one point falling down. Because we're actually still attracted. We're just, that's Maya, that's abominable, that's stool plus urine, but very nice. And then again falling down. So it is important actually that one develops his attraction to Krishna. That is only the ultimate way, that is the only way that the mind can ultimately be controlled. He has to develop his attraction to Krishna. And that is not ambiguous. It is specified. Practices of devotional service are specific. We're not giving general knowledge of God by which people can generally get attracted to Krishna. But rather we're getting very specific information about God so that people can become specifically attracted in a particular way to Krishna. And that way be controlled by that particular attraction. So it is important that we avail ourselves to the science of devotional service, how we can allow ourselves to become attracted to Krishna. I'm speaking the way I can do so in a safe way without getting in trouble. When I'm thinking. Unless the mind is attracted to Krishna in a particular way, nam, rup, guna, and lila, then we will be attracted by the nam, rup, guna, lila of this material world. Does that make sense? So are we attracted to Krishna? That question you have to ask yourself. You're attracted to Krishna? Some specific nam, rup, guna, lila? Oh, really? Yes.
Prabhu, so personally, I like the... I haven't heard too much about extricating the thoughts, but personally, I like that if the thought arises, just to let it simply flow away, because the analogy that I keep in mind is that when a river is muddied, then after some time, while we chant or think about Krishna or serving the devotees or plan how to increase Krishna consciousness, God consciousness, by the time we check back and the water has cleared, the mud has fallen to the bottom and the water is clear again.
Yeah, so it's a similar analogy.
That's very practical, and I like that.
You can do whatever works. But don't neglect to get attracted to Krishna. You can say last thing because then class is over.
I was... reading this, I'm staying here for a few days, and I was reading something that the essential keys for chanting And then the number eight, which is, I mean, it explains the chant Hare Krishna, listen to the mantra, and then make firm determination, bring the mind back from whatever, hearing the mantra, detach, neglect the mind, humility, and then the number eight, Namasraya. It says, Shishastakam verse, Rushi stage. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, Ashraya means shelter. So taking full shelter of the holy name of Krishna, that's the same as Sharanagati, or being fully surrendered to the name of Krishna, which happens at the stage of Ruchi. Fully surrendered to the name of Krishna means those six elements of Sharanagati, we're familiar with that. Accepting those things which are favorable for chanting the holy name of Krishna purely. Rejecting that which is unfavorable, knowing Krishna is my only protector, knowing he's my only maintainer, fully surrendering, and then utter humility. These are considered the six limbs of Sharanagati, which is actually the symptom of real faith. Then at that time, one is able to fully take shelter of the holy name, understanding that the name will give everything. I need not take shelter of anyone else. That doesn't mean devotees as such, but I need not take shelter of any material program or anyone else. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna, I will get everything, material and spiritual. If I want something material, I need not work hard like an ass. Because besides whatever I'm having from my karma, I can't do more than that anyway. If I'm thinking I can, that's ignorance. So the devotee who's taking shelter of the holy name, he will think that just by chanting Hare Krishna, I will get all material and spiritual success. I need not endeavor in any other way. And this way, he's considered fully surrendered to the holy name of Krishna. So he busies himself in chanting the holy name of Krishna. He doesn't have so many things to do where it tends to detract him from his chanting. Although, I would like to say, there is a realm of service involved. We have various services that we do as temple devotees. But as we become more surrendered to the name of Krishna, a devotee's attraction will become so profound, he will rarely want to do other things. That is mentioned by acharyas. Simply chanting the holy name of Krishna. That's, Ruchi means the stage of taste. So he can do. How many people can chant over 3 hours without feeling disgusted? Maybe Ratak Prabhu, you can do. Maybe you have a breaking point, 6 hours? How many can chant over 3 hours without feeling like exhausted and or excessively lusty or something like that? No. I was. Anyway, we can understand by their activities after the 32 rounds what is going on with the consciousness. It's not such an easy thing to have that taste. So to be surrendered to the holy name of Krishna is not an ordinary thing either. It is a very profound state of surrender to the Lord. That's what we need if we want to get the goal of life. Everyone has to become surrendered to the name of Krishna. Would they take interest in nothing else but chanting? Other services will be going on, of course, but his interest is in chanting the holy name incessantly. If we come to that stage, then guarantee back home back to Godhead. Until then, we're on thin ice. We should be very much concerned. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.